Welcome. This is Tony Reeves, and you are in the know. Today we are continuing our series, Living Through Jim Crow. Our show is A Tale of Two Sisters. I had the honor and opportunity to interview my wife's favorite aunts, Wilhelmina Powell Simpson, born in Augusta, Georgia.
I was born in 1944, September the 9th.
Raised in Augusta, Georgia, Ms. Powell Simpson spent 20 years working in a social work arena in the state of Alaska. Our next sister is Bernadette Howard.
13 July 1948.
Ms. Howard served 30 years in the United States Marine Corps and retired as a sergeant major. Despite going on two totally different paths, both sisters have very interesting perspectives that are extremely similar in light of their experiences growing up in the Jim Crow South.
Well, you know, it was the norm. It was the regular thing, you know, for black folks. We were on one side of the town and, you know, white folks was on one side of the town. You didn't go over there and they didn't come over to your side, and you really didn't. Only time you dealt with them is really at, you know, mainly at the grocery stores because they owned all the stores. And, you know, when you went downtown, you know, they owned all the stores there. A few of us worked in those stores. But it was like you did your thing on your side of the town and they did their thing on their side of the town. We didn't go to school together. We didn't go to church together. You know, it was like what they say, segregated. They were separate.
There were certain streets that we could walk, certain areas that we could go in, and we knew that, so we didn't go in those areas. You knew not to go into those places. I mean, that was a known thing, you know what I'm saying? You know, if you couldn't go across the street, you couldn't go across the street. You wouldn't go across the street.
During the course of Jim Crow, listen as Wilhelmina talks about how family and community came together to ensure the safety of everyone involved.
Because everybody would kind of look out for everyone's kids. They would say, I'm going to tell Miss Karen. You better get on back down there, you know, if you're a block or two away from the house.
And what would the community do to protect you from racism or discrimination at the time?
Try to keep you in the right place. So
how did you learn about the, you know, when you were growing up in those areas, how did you learn the boundaries? I mean, who made sure you knew you can be here, but you can't be here? You can be here, but you can't be here. And let me tell you what happens if mm-hmm. you go here. How'd you find out?
Mostly my grandmother and granddaddy. They would tell you that these are the areas that you are not supposed to be in. And then they had the things called the Ku Klux Klan. You heard of that?
I have.
Okay, they used to march every so often down our street, and you would be in the house, lights off, shades down, you know, the whole nine yards, because you were scared the Ku Klux Klan was going to come in your house and kill you. And so everybody was in the house, off the street, with lights on. All parents were aware of these areas, you know what I'm saying? So they tried to protect you best as they could.
Ms. Howard's path is slightly different, as she left Augusta, Georgia, and joined the Marine Corps straight out of high school. However, some of her experiences growing up in the Jim Crow South transitioned with her as she went into the military. Listen as she shares some of her experiences going forward.
how long was basic training?
It was 8 weeks.
During that 8 week time period, did you experience any bouts of racism or discrimination while you were there?
Well, of course. Well, it was. It was the norm, you know. As a black growing up in Augusta, you, like I said, you stayed in your space. They stayed in their space, and basically, they didn't. The white Caucasian recruits didn't really deal with us or talk to us or in our little group. That's why I say it was just three of us. I know for sure that we're together, and. We just stayed separate, you know. We didn't deal with each other as normal. You know, it was something I was used to. They stayed on their side, and we stayed on our side. When we had to get stuff done, of course, we had to do it as a group. And, of course, we got it done. But as far as going out of their way to talk to us or we going out of our way to talk to them was not happening.
After leaving Augusta, Georgia, and then spending the first 8 to 12 weeks in training in South Carolina, Ms. Howard found herself being stationed at her first duty station in California and finding out very quickly that the climate with regards to Jim Crow and how races interacted with each other didn't change no matter what part of the country you lived in.
Coming out of the South, was this the first time you had ever been to California?
Yes.
How was it when you first got there? Was it in terms of, you know, this is, we're talking, you're in 67 by this point in time. Was there any difference when you first got out there that you noticed?
At that point, no. Again, 67, being a black girl from the South, being kind of, both of my friends went to California with me, as a matter of fact. The three of us went through boot camp, through school, and to San Diego together. And we kind of hung together. The barracks, of course, was integrated. You know, it was like a big room with partitions, you know, to separate the little areas they call cubicles, you know, with wall lockers and partitions. You could rig up a curtain to cover your doorway so folks could actually see in. But you could hear everything that was going on. And basically, again, the Caucasians stayed together and the black folks stayed together, even as far as bunkmates are concerned. You know, it had at least two people in each cubicle. So it was kind of difficult, you know, dealing with Caucasians, you know, in the workspace there, because you could see that they really didn't care for you, and they wanted to give you the menial jobs, you know.
But for you though, but for your generation, if you thought it was racism, like, and you know better because you served 30 years and so forth, would you say that there are more mechanisms now to allow for, you know, service members to be able to report things that they think might be racism as opposed to when you came in?
Of course it is. You didn't have anybody to report it to when you came in. Unless you wanted, you say, you know, this Caucasian person is racist, you're going to have to report it to another Caucasian person. You know, and you weren't confident to even go talk to another white person about this white person being racist, because hell, they may be racist too and make it worse for you. I remember on one occasion when the afros originally first came out, everybody was wearing afros, and I was called to the battalion sergeant major's office because I was wearing an afro. They wanted me to change my hairstyle. And the comment she made, wouldn't it be easier for you to press your hair out than to wear an afro? No, it wouldn't. So you really didn't have anybody to complain to at that time or to talk to.
So how did they deal with the Afro situation?
I told her I was going to, no, it wasn't easier. And I never had to change it. She didn't make me change it. She didn't make me do anything to it. I don't guess she could. Legally.
Thank you for tuning in to another edition of In the Know. I am Tony Reeves. I'm so glad you were joining me.